This is Interlude, Held Me Down. A band of vampire AU, written by Her Love Was a Joke and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated R, contains the pairing Pete Wentz, Patrick Stump, and is part 9 of the Screaming Down the Starlit Sky universe. For additional warnings and content information, please check out the introductory post on my live journal. Zero. What took a lifetime to assemble took only minutes to tear apart. The cornerstones are first, obviously. Without those fundamental blocks, the rest came tumbling down. A jumbled mess of unrecognizable parts, no longer the sum of anything. It was beautiful, in the way that chaos is beautiful. Systematic disarray to be pieced back together, weighed and measured, twisted and refitted just so. It hurt. It hurt. Funny. She didn't feel a thing. One. The boy had never seen so much blood. Not in movies, and certainly not in real life. He stood in the doorway, rooted in place, staring with wide, horrified eyes. He couldn't help but think that there really shouldn't be that much blood in a human body. It was all over the floor, like wall-to-wall carpet, sticky and brown. There were patterns in it, and it took the boy a moment to realize that they were footprints, handprints, knees and elbows. His mother had fought as she died, had skated across the room on her own blood. A gurgling sound from the next room caught the boy's attention. It would be so easy to ignore it, to turn away and walk calmly out of the house, down the street. To wander until a police officer found him, took him aside and asked if he'd been home recently. He could say no. Live in a world where everything was okay, where he'd never come home to find blood soaking into the hardwood. It would only last for a little while. It would eventually all come screaming back. But it would be worth it to quiet the voices in his head, all of which were currently reenacting the scenario he'd walked in on. A thump in the other room drew the boy's eyes to the doorway, making him turn away from the ashen skin of his mother's face, the cloudy haze of her unseeing eyes. He was moving before he even realized he'd made the decision, stepping slowly, carefully, through the congealed blood. He was halfway to the doorway when he went down hard, his feet going out from under him. The boy slid across the floor, feet hitting the wall. His shirt had ridden up, and his back was covered with blood. It clung to his hair, ruined his hat. This should have bothered him, sent him into hysterics at the very least. But he was moving on autopilot, unable to feel much of anything. The boy got slowly to his feet and continued into the other room. He found his father by the dining room table. His mouth was hanging open, and he had a pool of blood all of his own. The boy knew, logically, that he should be screaming out loud, but all he could manage was the terror in his head. The boy wondered if that was what going crazy felt like. Knowing how you should react, but being unable to summon the will to act it out. What would people think if they were to find him like this? Would rumors start about the strange kid who stood there quietly, watching his father bleed out? Because that's what he was doing. His father wasn't dead yet, not really. His eyes were closed, but there was still the barely visible rise and fall of his chest. The boy could do something if he could convince himself to move, to put one foot in front of the other. Suddenly, it wasn't an issue anymore, because even that slight movement was gone. Without that to focus on, the boy was able to realize he wasn't alone in the room. There was someone standing in the corner, watching him with hungry eyes. The boy looked over at him, and the screaming in his head rose to deafening heights, though instead of terrified shrieking, it took on words, impeccably clear and accusing. "Your fault! It's all your fault!" "Mom, I'll be fine," the boy said impatiently, rolling his eyes as he listened to her fuss over the phone. "I'm going to the library with Joe. Nothing is going to happen. We're studying art history, for God's sake," he continued, hefting his school bag higher up on his shoulder. He looked around, but no one on the street was paying him any attention. He was thankful for that. "Okay, Mom, I'm gonna go now," the boy said, cutting his mother off mid-word. "Joe is here. Bye." He shoved his phone into his jeans pocket, just as a battered Oldsmobile, in need of muffler work, pulled up alongside the curb where he stood. "You're late," the boy said. "Traffic," Joe said simply. "You getting in, or are you planning to bitch all night?" "Fuck you," the boy said, sliding into the passenger side seat. "I just got off the phone with my mom. I had to tell her we were going to the library." "Well, there's a library on the campus," Joe mused. "We can always go there instead of the party." "No, fuck no," the boy said. "Just drive." He'd never gone to a dorm party before. He tried not to look wide-eyed and awed, but it was hard not to. His youth and inexperience must have shown on his face, because he seemed to attract everyone's attention. Pretty girls who cooed over him, touching his face. Boys in skinny jeans who not so subtly trailed fingers over his back, gauging how far he'd go. And then there was the guy with the predatory smile. White teeth too big for his mouth, the expression too sharp to be entirely friendly. His laugh was loud and almost obnoxious, but the boy found himself drawn to him anyway. He wanted this guy's approval. Wanted him, full stop. "Aren't you an awesome little dude?" the guy said, halfway into their conversation. The boy had eagerly answered almost every question put to him. "I think we're going to be the best of friends," the guy continued. If the boy had been thinking clearly, if he hadn't been preoccupied with the feel of a cool finger on the back of his neck, he might have stopped to wonder at the way that last statement almost sounded like a threat. The words kept replaying in the boy's head as he stared at the vampire in the corner. "I think we're going to be the best of friends." He remembered the almost threat, remembered how the thought had barely struck him earlier in the evening. He had been so lost in the guy's eyes, in his voice. He'd given the boy what he'd wanted most. Attention, undivided attention. The kind that didn't make him feel young and inexperienced, nervous and a little scared. Why had he blindly trusted the stranger? Why hadn't his instinct cringed at the man's look of anger when the boy pulled away, explaining that he had to go home? And finally, and perhaps the most damning of all, why hadn't the boy noticed the change in his tone when he remarked, "I'll see you later"? He hadn't thought anything of it, hadn't even stopped to think about it at all. This was his fault. His family was dead, and the vampire hadn't even been hungry. He had killed for the sake of killing. For the sake of hurting. To get back at someone who'd blown him off. The boy's mouth opened then, and he found that he had no trouble screaming for real this time. The vampire threw his head back and let out that braying laugh of his. Two. The boy wasn't so much a boy anymore, but that didn't stop him from occasionally thinking of himself that way. Physically, he was still young, barely 19, but he'd been through so much in the last 3 years. Coming home to find your family slaughtered had a tendency of doing that. He was no more 19 years old than he was a regular person. No, regular people had jobs. They went to school. They had girlfriends, boyfriends, jobs, and family. They had no clue about what walked the streets once the sun went down. The strain in the boy's muscles burned, but he tried to put it out of his mind. There were more important things to focus on. The need to draw air into his lungs, the imperative to keep running, the desire to stay alive. He couldn't hear anything but the thud-thud of his shoes on the pavement, the pounding of his heart in his ears. But those things didn't mean anything. The vampires only made noise if they wanted to. If they liked you enough to want to keep from startling you, or if they wanted to draw out the sheer terror of their presence. The boy didn't know what it said that the vampire on his trail didn't see fit to offer him either of those options. I think we're going to be the best of friends. Even 3 years later, he still couldn't get those words out of his head. They never really went away, popping up whenever the boy had a few moments to himself, when his thoughts weren't following a specific track. He tried to keep himself busy to prevent this, and consequently came across as preoccupied and detached. He didn't mind all that much. He relied on those in his group as much as they relied on him. But there would never be a friendship there. They'd never understand him or his reasons for being the way he was, and he was all right with that. Friends were too close to family, and he just couldn't be responsible for someone else like that again. Not when he'd already let down those closest to him once already. It hurt to draw air into his lungs. Breathing moved his broken ribs, and there was a sickening wet sound on each inhale, making him wonder if the pain in his chest meant he'd punctured a lung when he'd fallen. The roof wasn't that high, only 2 stories from the ground, but he'd hit a wooden planter on the sidewalk. Getting to his feet had been agony, and the boy thought for sure that he was done. But the vampire on the roof had just stood there patiently, waiting for him to get shakily to his feet and take off at a slow lope down the street. Knowing that he'd been given a head start only confused him more. He was sport. The boy knew this, could understand it to some degree. But even then, the head start didn't make a lot of sense. The vampire was closing in, ready to end it. Why prolong it? I think we're going to be the best of friends. Not fucking likely, the boy thought viciously. He took a corner particularly sharply and ran into a warm body, sending both of them to the ground. The boy's hat rolled away, but he didn't reach for it. It was just out of his grasp, and he wasn't about to put more stress on his ribs than he had to. Fuck, I've been looking for you. It was Andy, one of the group's newer recruits. He'd found out about the vampires by accident. One of them had been stupid enough to flash too much fang. The boy secretly thought less of Andy for that. thought less of everyone who'd just stumbled into this world. He didn't like anyone, really. Didn't hold anyone in particularly high regard. But he grudgingly respected those like himself. Those who'd been initiated by blood and horror, who still bore the scars and wouldn't ever be able to get away from them, no matter how long they lived. For however long that might be. "You went up the fire escape and then I lost you," Andy continued. He grabbed Patrick's wrist in a tight, frantic grasp and hauled him to his feet. "You didn't come back down the stairs or the ladder." "Found a faster way," the boy said. He turned to the side and coughed, the jerky movements making him cringe and hiss as it placed strain on his broken rib and injured lungs. He spat out a mouthful of blood and did his best not to stare at the rusty brown spatter on the sidewalk. There was no time to waste. And besides, a bloody Rorschach image wouldn't tell him anything he didn't already know about himself. "Let's just get the hell out of here," Andy exclaimed. He let go of the boy's wrist and turned on the ball of his foot, sprinting down the street. They should stay together, the boy thought. He was injured and probably weak as a kitten, all things considered. When the vampire caught up with them, and he would eventually, the boy would be of little use. He set off down the sidewalk, trying to catch up to Andy, who'd stopped suddenly near the alley that separated the arcade and the neighboring restaurant. Both businesses were dark, long since closed, and Andy stood in the light from the flickering street lamp, staring at something just out of the boy's line of sight. "Andy?" he wheezed, forcing himself to keep breathing through the pain. Andy didn't move a muscle, just stood where he was, his eyes wide as he took in whatever was happening. The boy made his way to Andy's side and looked into the alley. He really wasn't surprised to find the rest of their group, their bodies broken, piled in an obscene heap at the end of the narrow strip of pavement. He pressed the heel of his hand into his injured side, using the pain in an effort to keep him in the moment, to keep those fucking words from rattling around in his head. It didn't work. "I think we're going to be the best of friends." The vampire was standing in the alley, admiring his handiwork. He looked so normal, so perfectly human with his hands in the pockets of his red hoodie, with his tight jeans and ridiculous green Supras. No one would ever take him for a murderer, for a monster who killed others so that he could live another night. No, he wasn't even that. The boy could understand those people who romanticized vampires, who created stories about how they begrudgingly lived on stolen time. To live at all costs was a biological imperative. But what this vampire did, the way he delighted in the destruction of everything the boy might possibly care about, that was something else entirely. That was just the way real vampires were. They might look human, beautiful and enticing, so as to distract inexperienced boys at parties, to make naive kids fall a little bit in love with them. But looks were more than just deceiving. The boy looked into the open eyes of a girl with long, curly blonde hair and tried so hard to remember her name. She was new, one of the people he never paid attention to. She'd fallen into vampire hunting ass backward, hadn't known vampires existed until one of their group told her. He'd had little time for her, had thought about her scornfully. But she hadn't deserved to die. None of them had. Chalk up 5 more deaths to his poor choices. He'd long since lost track of the number, of their names and their faces, but he knew they were there. His parents had been the first, but certainly not the last. He wondered if there was a way he could have ended this so much sooner. There had been many near scrapes in the past, and one stood out more than the others. When he felt like torturing himself, his small bit of penance, the boy would go over it in his head, would examine it from every angle and second-guess his every decision, his every action. Surely he could have brought this epic cat-and-mouse game to its close that night, if he'd only moved a little faster, thrust the stake a little harder. If only he hadn't been momentarily blinded by those disarming eyes. If only he hadn't listened to that voice, hadn't let his judgment become clouded. He'd had him in those minutes, could have easily killed him. Except in that moment, he was 16 years old again, young and confused, wanting to please, wanting to make a connection. His stake hadn't hit its mark, and the vampire had gotten away. The voices in his head were screaming again, sharp, accusing words that he knew well. Your fault. It's all your fault. The vampire moved faster than the boy could follow. One second he was standing near the pile of bodies, and the next he was grabbing Andy, jumping up onto the roof of the arcade and disappearing. The boy stood there, hunched over, feeling the extent of his injuries and completely at a loss as to what he was supposed to do. He could give chase, but what good would come of that? He had no way of taking on the vampire when he could barely even stand upright. Andy was more than likely dead already. He did his best not to flash back to pools of blood rotting the once fine hardwood floors in his parents' house. They hadn't died quickly, not like those people in the alley. The people who'd relied on the boy like he'd relied on them. In the end, he spent the rest of the night trying to follow the vampire's trail. There wasn't much to go on, so the game was obviously finished for the time being. Wherever he'd gone, the boy wasn't meant to follow. Andy would just have to fend for himself. Three. The boy was even less a boy now, 6 years on. But there was something about the vampire that would forever have him feeling all of 16 years old again. All unsure limbs and confused thoughts. They didn't cross paths as often now as they did back then. Not when the boy had to spend most of his time keeping out of sight. Knowing that he was well and truly alone. There was a human underground, of course, but trusting a stranger was a dangerous thing. The vampires were infiltrating the colonies somehow, and it was everyone for himself. The boy hadn't realized just how much he'd relied on his network until it was suddenly gone. It hadn't happened overnight, of course. It hadn't even been that much of a gradual thing. Sometimes he wondered if it would have been better that way. If he'd just one day woken up and realized how fucked up everything was. How subtly they'd infiltrated human society. There was nothing subtle about the vampires. The dandies with their fine dress. The punks with their aggression. And the hoods, all but decimated in the dandies' wrath. But a presence in the city nonetheless. He couldn't trace the downfall of the human race to any one specific point in time. There was no great war that was lost, no surprise takeover. It had been an inch-by-inch gradual process. Even after they'd come out of hiding, It hadn't been an overnight thing, but a steady process. People fled, naturally, coming together to try and find a way to live in secret, to avoid the vampires who'd taken to herding their food, much the way humans had herded cattle. That's all they were now, the boy knew. Food. They weren't people anymore. Didn't have wants and loves and desires. They had the day-to-day struggle consuming their every moment. They had hard lives and no one to lean on. He supposed they were small family units that had somehow survived, groups of friends who tried to stick together. But he'd yet to find any. That didn't mean they weren't out there, just that they'd gotten good at staying hidden. As it was, the only others he'd come across had been aggressive, preferring to try and kill him before he killed them. The boy had gotten very good at creeping about in the shadows, and getting from one point to another without being noticed. He tried not to do it often. The vampires were a lot harder to fool than their idiot human servants. But now and then, it simply became a necessity. Even though the world had fallen down around him, even though there wasn't much point in trying to make up for the innumerable lives lost because of him in the last 6 years, the boy just couldn't keep himself from eavesdropping on meetings, searching for useful information. It was stupid. What was he going to do with the information once he had it? Who would he turn to? The network of hunters had fallen apart. And even if they hadn't, no one really trusted him after his group had been murdered. It was suspicious, they'd all said, that the boy could point out which vampire had done it. Too suspicious that he would be the only survivor. He did it anyway. He found that even he needed something pointless to cling to. It was one of those meetings that found him crawling through the dirt, keeping out of sight and barely daring to breathe so he could hear every muted word through the closed window. He didn't worry about someone hearing his heartbeat. There were enough humans around to confuse the issue. Whores and food, trusted servants and playthings. The boy was as safe as he was going to be. Besides, if someone caught him, he could always play up his human frailties. Claim he'd fallen, lost his balance. They'd check his wrist for a mark, and that would probably be that. The mark was a flat, waxy-looking scar on the inside of his wrist. It had been difficult to carve, and the boy had spent several nerve-wracking hours with a knife held in his shaking fingers, doing his best not to push too hard on the blade. He'd done it in the end, copied the design perfectly from the wrist of a dead whore, a kid who might have been pretty at one time, but who'd been so used by the time he'd been killed that none of that initial beauty remained. It was an intricate design, a combination of two different seals, really. Something that wasn't unheard of in vampire society, but which was rare enough as it was. Vampires didn't often pool their resources. A bat, flanked by two stars on either side. Andy's sigil. And Pete's. Pete. Such an innocuous name for the creature that had gleefully destroyed so many lives. Pete. No, best not to think about him that way. Best to retreat to more familiar, less confusing ground. Andy, then. The boy understood Andy favoring stars. As a human, he'd burned brighter than the others, no matter what the boy had thought of the situation that had brought Andy to the group in the first place. He'd been smart, quick-thinking. Others, people more connected to the power structure of the group, had thought Andy could be a light in the darkness. The perfect one to help them recruit others, to draw frightened people out of their terrors, to get them to stop screaming long enough to fight. A vampire would find that funny. He'd adopt that symbol of hope for his own, twist it into a new meaning, pervert it until it was nothing more than a sick joke. The bat, though, that still puzzled the boy. Oh, he knew all about the tattoo, had known since that very first night when he'd sat too close to an older guy, trying not to blush when he snuck peeks at darkly inked lines low on a flat stomach. That symbol had confused him then. So ugly, but still so incredibly tantalizing. He'd wanted to touch it, with hands and mouth and tongue. He'd wanted it so much. Funny how something so enticing could have become something so terrible. They told stories about it now, the humans did. They whispered about it, the marked and unmarked alike. Beware the Bart Skull. It's a harbinger of destruction. The boy took a deep breath and pressed himself closer to the window, struggling to hear what was being said inside the dimly lit room. He once again pushed aside the feeling of unease that came over him. He was safe, he told himself. He'd show the mark, and any vampires would back down and leave him be. Unless, of course, they decided to march him home to his master. The boy didn't think about that possibility, told himself that none of the vampires would bother to pay that much attention to a human they couldn't fuck or kill. There would be no fun in returning him to his owner, not unless there was even the vaguest possibility that he'd share. Pete Wentz didn't share with others. And what he shared with Andy Hurley had its limits. The meeting ended, and the boy slowly got to his feet. It had been a wasted trip. There hadn't been any new information to be had, though he'd had difficulty hearing all of the responses. Several of the vampires in the room had spoken in quiet tones, almost as though they'd feared being overheard. The thought gave the boy pause, but he forced himself to push it away. He could puzzle over it and what it meant when he was back in the relative safety of his shelter. Right now, he had to get away before he was noticed. I wondered when we'd cross paths again. The voice was familiar. Had replayed in the boy's thoughts every day for 6 years. I think we're going to be the best of friends. The boy turned slowly, as though his careful movements could somehow make what he was about to see somehow less true. The vampire was standing behind him, leaning casually against the brick wall, arms crossed. His hoodie was unzipped, and his chest was naked beneath it, giving him a clear, terrifying view of that tattoo. His hands had once itched to touch it. Now they itched to cover his eyes. If you missed me, all you had to do was say, I would have marked you up myself. His eyes were on the boy's wrist, as though he could somehow see the scar that was hidden beneath the ratty cuff of his shirt. He smiled, the expression predatory and not very nice. He took a step forward. Stop, the boy said, raising one hand to ward the vampire off, as though that would actually work. It's time to end this, the vampire said. 6 years is enough foreplay, don't you think? The boy didn't even have time to shake his head, to turn and run, or even cry out. The vampire was on him in an instant, his fingers biting into the boy's arms, pinning him to the wall. His head was twisted to the side, and sharp teeth sliced cleanly through his throat. Zero. Seems like a bit of overkill, the woman remarked as she watched the boy on the ground. He was curled up tightly on himself, trying to make his body as small as possible. She'd seen it countless times, loved the way humans tried to make themselves into as tiny a target as they could, as though that would somehow make it harder to hurt them. It really didn't.
That's really for me to decide,
the dandy replied. He looked away from the human just long enough to flick a disinterested glance at the woman, before turning back to the trembling boy. The woman was used to such treatment from dandies in general, and this one in particular. She spared a moment to wonder how things would have been different if another gang had claimed her, if she hadn't woken up in a dirty dive bar surrounded by punks. She could wear pretty dresses, sure, be a little closer to the human girl she'd been so long ago. But more than that, she'd have a little respect. Dandy women were rare. They carried an authority that those in the other gangs seemed to lack.
I trust that I don't have to remind you to keep quiet about this,
the dandy continued. He didn't even bother to look over at her. The woman tugged on her orange hair and tried to control her temper. No, you don't, she replied. She looked down at the boy on the floor and once again wondered why he was so special, why the dandy had finally claimed his favor. A valuable thing for something so vulgar. She was young, but she'd broken minds before. Her talent had developed early, and the gang had taken full advantage of it, presenting her with a never-ending supply of terrified humans to practice on. It hadn't been anything like this. She'd never torn down someone's life, their thoughts and experiences, only to rebuild it all with such a specific person at the center of it, as the cause of it. This was intricate. It had taken so much more time than simply fucking up the kid's head, tampering with his memories, adding new ones and hiding others. She was an illusionist. Spinning images came as easily as breathing. But she'd only begun to explore how her gift could be used to influence in more unconventional ways, to set future events in motion. How the dandy had found out about it, she'd likely never know. But dandies were dandies, and they had their sources. It wasn't her place to question it, not when she'd been in his debt. She wasn't anymore. The thought was freeing. It made her smile.
I suggest you leave, then,
the dandy said. The dismissal wasn't wholly unexpected, but it still stung like a hand across her cheek. The gall of him to order her about when he couldn't even do his own dirty work. Of course not. That would be too obvious, he'd said. It would be like leaving his fingerprints all over the place. The woman took one last look at the boy. Patrick, he'd been called, back when he'd still had his own thoughts, his own personality. And then turned toward the door. As she walked away, she couldn't help but smile. She'd done her job well, had taken everything into account. She couldn't wait to see how it would all blow up in the dandy's face. And it would, she knew. She'd made sure of it. Haley Williams was nobody's fool. She knew how to pick sides with the best of them. The end. Unfold. I've lost all.